Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema. Who were these guys?
Hut Junkions, and welcome to a very militaristic episode of Junk Food Cinema, brought to you by FilmSchoolRejects.com.
Dot com?
Dot com.
Dot GIF Invasion. This is the weekly cult and exploitation film cast, so good, it just has to be fattening. I'm your host, Brian Salisbury, and I'm joined, as per usual, by my friend and co-host. He's a novelist, he's a screenwriter, he's a lieutenant of Megaforce, Mr. C. Robert Cargill.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's going great. You know, we have been hassled for a couple months by a junkie on.
Yeah.
Who has been very excited for us to cover this movie.
I feel like, if nothing else, Junk Food Cinema, by the way, at Junk Food Cinema on Twitter and such, is a podcast that listens to the will of its listeners, that really is connected to what our audience wants, what they have been pining for, and we try to deliver that as often as we can.
So we're giving it to you. You demanded it. You hounded us. So here it is, the 1991 Sean Astin, Will Wheaton, boy school assault, diehard knockoff masterpiece, Small Soldiers.
You know, when this junkion proceeded to tweet at us a GIF from this movie every day for a solid month, and put context and storyline behind all the GIFs, I was very, very impressed. And normally, In order for Junkions to tell us what we're going to talk about, you know, you have to join at, by the way, patreon.com/junkfoodcinema at that higher $25 tier before you get the chance to do that. But we thought, you know what? Someone who's willing to go to this much trouble, put this much effort and this much artistry behind it, absolutely deserves an episode on Small Soldiers now, starring Sean Astin.
Now, of course, none of those gifts had anything to do with this movie at all.
I found that a little strange, that for someone who loved that movie so much, they kept putting up gifs of like random monsters and toys that I didn't really.
The movie's called Small Soldiers.
Right, yeah. Like, I don't.
Like, it's Sean Astin, it's Will Wheaton, they're kids, they're defending themselves against terrorists. Like, they're small soldiers.
Yeah, and we have a rich tradition on the show of talking about diehard knockoffs, and this is possibly one of the best diehard knockoffs of Small Soldiers.
The Regis School for Boys, where the country's best families.
Hey, bring that back here!
Send the world's worst students.
Oh, shit. I'm looking this up on my phone, and apparently that's Toy Soldiers.
Oh, shit.
We watched the wrong movie.
Oh, fuck, wait. Wait, what movie are we supposed to be talking about?
We're supposed to be talking about the movie where Joe Dante essentially remade himself.
Oh, shit.
Where he remade Gremlins.
Yes, with toys. Yes, where Joe Dante pulls a John Carpenter.
Toy Soldiers.
Yes, Toy Soldiers. Okay, so we're going to talk about Toy Soldiers, the movie directed by Joe Dante from 1998, about the toys that come to life and battle other toys and hurt people in the process.
So hold on a second while we go watch that.
Okay.
In a secret lab, the world's most advanced military microprocessor has been created. But the Cold War is over. For Globotech to survive, new markets must be found. Now, all that power has been placed into the brain of a fighting machine unlike any known to man. They made it strong. They made it small. They made a mistake.
Yeah. Commandos, attack!
I'm talking about toys that are so smart, when kids play with them, they play back.
Chip Hazard, reporting for duty.
You put munitions chips in toys?
Big action.
Oh my God, I'm having an aneurysm.
Big movie.
They might be defective.
What are you packing, Tiny?
Packing you.
Small Soldiers.
You'd have to be crazy not to be scared.
And we're back. That was a really good movie, too.
Yeah. I don't know why we watched that other film to prep this up, but that's how we do it.
We got our gifts crossed, and here we are. Finally, by popular demand of
We Were Soldiers, the 2002 Mel Gibson masterpiece.
Daddy, what is a war?
It's when some people try to take the lives of other people, and then soldiers like your daddy have to, you know, it's my job to go over there and stop them.
Now, of course, we're talking about the Joe Dante Soldier. We were harassed quite a bit, and so we just
did you just call this movie the Joe Dante Soldier?
The Joe Dante Soldier movie?
So it's, wait, the one with Kurt Russell and his head shaved and it's...
That's the movie we watched. We watched Soldier with Kurt Russell.
On a remote planet, a community of outcasts faces extermination.
Everything else is just a haircut.
Yes, this is a movie we've been meaning to talk about for a long time.
Yes.
It's been a long time coming. We all love Gremlins. Gremlins is great. But what if instead of Gremlins, they were out of control toys created by Jay Moore and David Cross? Let's find out.
Let's start with that scene because...
No, let's start with the business first because we've got a lot of business.
Oh, yeah, we did. We buried the business with our
little kind of kicking our fan in the nuts.
Sorry, Levi. Junk Food Cinema, as you can tell, is the weekly cult and exploitation film got so good, it just has to be fattening. I'm sorry that this is how I'm prefacing this. You can follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema. You can also find our entire back catalog on iTunes as well as Blog Talk Radio. And if you really like the show...
I mean really like the show enough to send us gifts like almost daily for like 3 months.
If you like this show more than Hollywood likes putting the word soldier in movies...
Which is kind of a lot.
You can go to patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. And for as little as a dollar an episode, you get access to bonus content no one else gets to hear. And if you do join, I want to say this again. If you join at that higher tier, that $25 tier, and you know you do that for, let's say, a month, like you get to actually tell us what to cover.
Yeah, you tell us a movie and we'll cover it. We try to avoid movies we hate, so we'll go, hey, dude, we really hate this movie, so we're just going to be kind of kicking one of your favorite movies in the nuts for an hour. We'll do it, but we'd rather not.
On the flip side of that, that's something we never get to do because that's not the core values of our show.
It's
so
not. It's we love sharing love.
But like, it might be fun to do that every once in a while.
We would never have thought to do Stone Cold as an episode. But you know what? We had a lot of fun doing that episode.
Stone Cold was so much fucking fun.
And so that's why we decided after Stone Cold, we were like, what if we did Small Soldiers at the end of the month and just never mentioned that we were going to do it and just kind of dropped it out there without any warning? Hey, we'd make at least one person happy, and hopefully we're going to make the rest of you happy.
And who ends up getting the last laugh? Well, in that movie, it's always Lance Henriksen.
Yes.
But in this case, we did have one junkie on who just, the sheer passion and magnitude of the inundation of tweets that we got every single day. I feel like at this point, can I have my son back? We've met your demands. Like, is it over now? Like,
and really, this is a movie that's been on our shortlist for a long time. I mean, I had it as a clamshell VHS when it came out.
Oh, hell yeah, man.
It is a great film. It is a film that it has a couple scenes, not just one appearance, but a couple scenes with the patron saint of junk food cinema himself, Mr. Dick Miller.
Oh, because it's a Joe Dante movie, of course Dick Miller's going to be in it.
And it's just the beginning of the amazing, unfucking believable cast this movie has. If I just named this movie off without even telling you who is in the movie, you'd be, what fucking movie is this?
Exactly.
It is insane. But the thing is that so many of the biggest stars of this movie never appear because they're the voices of these small characters, these small soldiers, if you will.
I believe that I will. Because everything else is just a pocket protector.
I mean, even the girl next door love interest in this movie is a huge fucking star.
Which I watched the behind the scenes making of kind of featurette on this on YouTube. And they were like, this actor who you know from blah, 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 blah. Do you know what, at this point, Kristen Dunst's biggest credit was?
At this point, it was Interview with a Vampire.
It was Interview with a Vampire.
Yeah, and she was that, it's like, oh shit, that's the girl from Interview with a Vampire.
But the best part is they were like, but now she's playing the girl next door. I'm like, yeah, a real Mary Jane Watson type. What?
did they say that?
No, but they said the girl next door, and the first that's thing I thought was, yeah, Mary Jane Watson type. Oh shit. There it goes.
Yeah, no, and of course now she's, you know, a megastar. She's made tons of genre. She's an incredible actress.
The kid that plays Alan Abernathy, though, in the vignette, they were like, from the hit movie Harriet the Spy, and I was like, hit movie?
Oh, at the time.
Was it really?
Oh, yeah, no, it did really well, and in fact, on video, did well for years. It was one of those really popular rentals, because kids would come in and want to watch Harriet the Spy.
Okay.
No, it was incredibly popular with the Nick Kids generation.
Now, this is interesting. One of the really interesting things about this movie is that they wanted to do it 100% practical. They wanted to have these toys coming to life, battling each other, 100% practical. So they went to the fucking godfather of practical effects, Stan Winston. And Stan Winston designed...
Tell them to go fuck themselves and said it's not possible.
No, he did it. They used like miles and miles of urethane and made these puppets. And there's like all this footage of like six different people controlling one puppet. And then they realized how much easier it would be to do it digitally.
Yes, that's the thing, is it's to do a lot of it digitally, because a lot of it is actual toys.
It's about two-thirds digital, one-third practical, and I think the one-third practical is what looks the absolute best.
Well, yeah, but the thing is watching this, I watched this in HD on my projector, projecting at large, and it looked really good for 20-year-old visual effects. It looked really good. Like, there's a couple things where you're like, well, that's clearly digital, but not like that takes you out of the movie. Like, it all fucking works.
Yeah, no, it works no matter what it is, but I think the practical stuff is just so fucking gorgeous.
I think the most interesting thing about this movie is that Joe Dante is essentially remaking his masterpiece.
Yeah.
15 years later. Like, this is a weird choice for a director to have made Gremlins. And then go and go, well, what if we remade Gremlins, but instead of Gremlins, they're action figures coming to life.
Right.
That's just a weird fucking choice.
Yeah.
But it's also fucking cool, because this movie is, while it is Gremlins, it's its own thing, and is, for a movie, this is PG-13,
well, we
right?
We talk about that, because when Joe Dante was first given this project. Now, we have to mention, this is a co-production of Universal and DreamWorks. Like, this is like fucking big dogs coming together.
And by the way, keep in mind, this is 1998. This is early DreamWorks.
Very early
DreamWorks. This is like just post-Peacemaker DreamWorks. Like, yes. They had just put out their first and maybe second film.
I feel like DreamWorks would not like that distinction in its timeline, pre-Peacemaker, post-Peacemaker.
No. Peacemaker is the first DreamWorks movie.
No, it is. I'm just saying, that's probably the one movie they're like, we don't need to. It's fine. We've made better.
Oh, no. DreamWorks has made far worse films than George Clooney's little Jack Ryan knockoff.
And we're going to name them all right now. What are the movies? Movies that are worse than Peacemaker that DreamWorks made. So they come together, and the edict is, we need a movie that's going to play to teenagers, and it's going to be edgy and different and cool. So Joe Dante starts to make that movie, and then like there's some interesting parallels here between Joe Dante and George Lucas, because then all of a sudden the fast food chains start getting involved and saying that we're going to put out these toys, and the KB Toy Store is like, we're going to put out the toys, and we need it to be a little softer for kids if we're going to sell these kids' meals and these toys. So they end up having to excise some of the stuff that really kind of leaned harder on the PG-13, but some of it remains, and the stuff that remains is so fucking bonkers that you're like, why is this in a kids' movie? And then you find out, oh, because it was intended to be a much edgier thing, much like Gremlins. Gremlins is not a fucking kids movie. Anybody that tells you Gremlins is a kids movie is out of their goddamn mind. Gremlins is a fucking frightening, like...
It's a horror film. It scared the shit out of me as a kid.
It's like a Christmas horror. Even Gremlins 2 is a fucking horror film. Like, it's not... Neither of those are kids movies. So this is the kids movie equivalent of Gremlins, happening in a small town in Ohio. They went to great lengths to make where they actually shot Look and Feel Like Ohio. They use the Akron, Ohio area code when he gives his phone number. They have like the caller, I believe, or the Plains dealer, the Cleveland Plains dealer newspaper is on sale at a newsstand. Like they're really trying to sell you that California is Ohio. And we open at basically a commercial for a company called Globotech, which is a munitions company that's starting to branch out into consumer products, and they have purchased Heartland Toys. Now, if there was ever a more obvious metaphor for the corporatization of America, it's a company called Globotech buying a company called Heartland Anything.
And the new boss is who, Brian?
I'm just saying, we're going to make fucking cigarettes, and we're going to make burgers, and we're going to make Cadillacs, and we're going to make non-biodegradable boxes. It's Dennis Leary.
It's Dennis fucking Leary. So,
such an asshole.
Opening scene of this movie is three comedians in a room together.
Thank you. That's what I was going to say, is that opening boardroom scene, I wasn't sure if it was a scene from Small Soldiers or I was at like a laughing comedy festival. I was just like, what is happening?
Well, oh my God, the number of times these guys must have opened for, the number of times Jay Moore and
David Cross
opened for Dennis Leary in the 90s, probably astronomical. And probably it started off David Cross, Jay Moore, Dennis Leary, and now it would be the other way around.
It's strange how that works. But, you know, it does call into question. He's the CEO of a major corporation. That doesn't strike me as a regular Joe with a regular job. That's all I'm going to say.
I don't know. He seems to like football and porn and books about war.
Or toys about war.
Toys about war. He loves toys about war. And so, of course, this is what's so great about this is these three guys, like Jay Moore was really good at playing the sleazy, he was the go-to sleaze guy in 90s and early aughts comedy. You got David Cross playing the nerd, of course, very socialist, anti-corporatist. You've got Dennis Leary, who loves taking down corporate bullshit, playing a corporate asshole, doing what he does best. And then they're like, let's make these awesome toys that can actually punch their way out of their box.
And did you notice he gets his moment in every fucking movie that Dennis Leary shows up in? He gets his moment to vamp and do Dennis Leary comedy.
Well, that's why you didn't hire Dennis Leary. Like when Dennis Leary finally did his TV show about firefighters, that's where people went, oh shit, he's actually got range. He can act, he can perform. He's one of those comedians that understands performance and timing. But in the 90s, when you hired Dennis Leary, you got Dennis Leary to get Dennis Leary. And really, you got Dennis Leary to get the more controllable Bill Hicks. Like, that's what you did. You're like, I want Bill Hicks, but without the part where he's going to go off into Goat Boy for 15 minutes.
We talked about White Lightning and Gator last week, but now you're saying hiring Dennis Leary is Bill Hicksploitation.
So they decide they're going to make these fucking crazy toys that are smart. And hey, you work for Globotech now. You have access to all this crazy
and
shit.
And this is his fucking little comedy. It's the only one he gets in this movie. Normally it's much longer, but he gets one moment of this movie. He's watching a toy commercial of this. Jay Moore's rolling out this line of soldier action figures. And in the commercial, it punches out of the box. And he goes, can anyone really do that? And they're like, no, not really. And he's like, you know what I'm sick of? I'm sick of these commercials that make women feel like they're going to look like Cindy Crawford after one application. And it's like, okay, here we go. And then it just cuts it short. And I was like, oh, I was actually expecting more. Okay, fair enough.
In fact, you got Jay Moore. And that's our show, folks.
All right.
Thank you for tuning in.
This has been a podcast. Thank you for listening.
No, so, yeah, but it's very much that. And we get this setup that leads to the Gremlins reference.
Yeah.
Because we should probably reference the movie we are remaking at this point by throwing in that David Cross's...
his password for the new company is Gizmo.
And the thing is...
That's not... By the way, there's like 12 more Gremlins references in this movie.
There are. But here's the thing.
Overt references.
Here's the thing. That scene has no bearing on the film whatsoever. It literally exists so that we could see the password is Gizmo.
And it's funny because they do a switcheroo where Jay Moore can't remember his password, but David Cross told Jay Moore that his password was Gizmo, so he uses David Cross's password. Now, if that...
No bearing on the plot whatsoever.
In any way had any negative impact on David Cross or positive impact on Jay Moore, that would be a consequence. That would be a plot point. Instead, it's like, oh, you just wanted to say Gizmo a couple more times, didn't you?
Yeah, that's... So that is...
Really drive it home.
They're driving it all night.
Funny that David Cross, Jay Moore, and Dennis Leary are having trouble really landing the punchline of that joke, and they just keep hitting on it over and over again.
But so they go and make their crazy fucking toys.
They use these processing chips that are military grade, state of it is basically the MacGuffin 5000.
Now, here's what's interesting about this is they need villains. And so the villains are picked to be this they pull a George Lucas, where they see this other thing that work has been put into and go, you know what? They'd make great enemies. But the thing is, David Cross is a genuine genius kids toy manufacturer, and he gets kids. And so he creates these cool little mutants that are called Gorgonites.
Which are essentially Ninja Turtles.
They're essentially Ninja Turtles, but they, you know, are lost from their world. They're trying to find their way home. So they've got to investigate and find and learn about the world around them. And instantly Dennis Leary like discard. He's like, learn, fuck pass. You.
Pass. Kids don't want to learn. Kids want action.
Hard pass. And so, but when they go to make the Gorgonites, he programs that all into them. So their personalities are actually making them, even though they're supposed to be the villains, they're actually the good guys.
Yeah.
And the militaristic G.I. Joe guys are the villainous fucking assholes.
This is really a movie written by all of us when we were nine. It's like, what if the Turtles were the bad guys and the G.I. Joes were the good guys? But then we just realized we liked the Turtles more. And so the G.I. Joes became the bad guys.
Yeah. So let us just go through this crazy list of voice actors playing the Commando Elite and then the Gorgonites, because it's crazy how they've done it. What they've done is they have taken a list of some of the most badass actors or lovable actors of all time who have played military types in movies and all have famous military roles, and they gave them the soldiers. And then when they went to go do the Gorgonites, every single one of them is a comedian voice actor.
The thing to preface this is to say that there are two movie reunions going on in the voice casting of the Gorgonites and the Small Soldiers.
Yes.
And it's pretty fucking incredible.
So
what's happening?
All right. So let us hit, of course, you know, everybody knows who's playing, you know, Major Chip.
Hazard. Yeah.
And that, of course, is Tommy Lee Jones.
Because if you want somebody with a military-sounding voice that's just going to boss people around, you cannot do better than Tommy Lee Jones, who I am willing to bet thousands of dollars was talked into doing this movie by his grandkids, much like he did Two-Face the year before.
Yeah. So you've got Ernest Borgnine.
Yep.
You've got Jim Brown.
Yep.
You've got Bruce Dern.
Mm-hmm.
You've got George Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Clint Walker.
Sure.
And those are your Commando Elite. Of course,
Hold on. Ernest Borgnine, Jim Brown, George Kennedy, and Clint Walker. I feel like all of those guys were in a movie together.
Well, no, that's only four, and I think
there were more of them.
There
right?
were more of them, like yeah. a dozen.
Like yeah, like
technically there's a dozen of them, like but a, I mean there's one extra dude who's
yeah,
their leader,
there's
and
a
then,
dozen of them, but they didn't shower.
So there's
a lot.
Like 14 of them,
so
but
they weren't like really a
technically
clean
they're
dozen?
A dirty dozen.
Yes, there it is. Yeah,
there it is. So yeah, so we have many members of the Dirty Dozen plus Bruce Dern.
Well, Bruce Dern was a replacement for Richard Jekyll, who's also in the Dirty Dozen, who unfortunately died during like when the start of principal photography. So they brought in Bruce Dern as a replacement. Also notably absent, but very much alive at the time. Hey, I don't want to do your fucking movie about toys. All right. I'm not going to vote. Does the toy, let me ask you this. Does he have a mustache? No, fuck you. I'm out. I got to do Family of Cops 12. So
you're
yeah.
really, really angry about Family of Cops.
Have you watched it? It's fucking garbage.
I've not watched Family of Cops, but you seem really angry about these Family of Cops movies.
I'd rather watch Death Wish 5, Faces of Death. Yep, that's what it's fucking called. And I'd rather watch that.
Did he actually turn this down?
Yes. Yeah, they offered him a spot, and he was like, I'm not voicing a fucking toy. Why would I do that? So, yeah, which is, it's depressing.
Chuck, no.
Chuck, you could have been in Small Soldiers. Ugh. Come on.
So then we get the Gorgonites, who, of course, Archer voiced amazingly by Frank Langella.
In his, I would say, my third favorite character played by Frank Langella. The first being, obviously, Skeletor, for fuck's sake, come on. And the second being his Dracula. I thought his Dracula was phenomenal. So it's my third favorite Frank Langella character.
Really? You're not going to put Dave in there?
Dave is a really great... I thought you were going to say Richard Nixon, but no, he is really great in Dave. This is true. Also,
he is great as Nixon as well.
Yeah, Kevin Dunn in this movie was in Dave with Frank Langella. So there's your 6 degrees of Kevin Dunn.
So there it is. So then, of course, with Frank Langella, we've got Christopher Guest. We've got Michael McKean. We've got Harry Shearer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
and then Jim Cummings.
Yeah, Jim Cummings, who is famous for doing the voice of Winnie the Pooh and practically every cartoon character from 1987 to 2002.
Yeah. And then we have the Gwendy dolls, who are played by Sarah Michelle Gellar and Christina Ricci.
So
these are just the voices of the little soldiers.
Michelle Gellar, so unknown at this time, or like just starting to be known, that in the featurette that they made, which was clearly made in 97.
Yeah.
They only talk to Christina Ricci. They don't even mention Sarah Michelle Gellar at all.
Because Sarah Michelle Gellar wasn't anybody until Bundy.
Bundy. Yeah. Until she killed a bunch of women.
She killed a bunch of women.
She's taking a lot of nipples as trophies. It was a weird time for Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Buffy,
yes. Christopher Reeve's wife, first wife from Switching Channels.
That is correct.
Buffy. I want to go back to the Gorgonites for a second because Michael McKean, Christopher Guest, Harry Shearer, that's a fucking Spinal Tap reunion.
Yeah, it is.
It's Spinal Toys.
It's fucking Spinal Toys.
Spinal Toys is happening on the Gorgonite side of things.
So this movie is not only sub-referencing its predecessor, it's sub-referencing two other major films.
Now, can I tell you who Joe Dante originally, the cast of what movie Joe Dante originally wanted to voice the Commando Elite?
No.
I can't tell you that. Okay, guys. No. Sorry. No.
What is this? An informative podcast? No. This is a fucking ego piece.
I'm sorry. Wait. Listeners are going to learn? Pass. No. Originally, Joe Dante wanted the cast of Predator to be the voice of the Commandos.
Holy shit.
Arnold was going to be Chip Hazard. Shane Black was going to be Kip Killigan. Carl Weathers was going to be Butch Meathook. Jesse Ventura would be Brick Bazooka. And Sonny Landham was going to be Nick Nitro with Bill Duke as Link Static.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, I kind of want to live in that universe a little bit.
I mean, you know what? Look, you know what? That would be amazing, but no, I love Predator.
Oh, yeah.
And I love every single name you just said, but I love Dirty Dozen more. Yeah. I love Dirty Dozen with all my heart. And Dirty Dozen plus Bruce Dern, I mean, that's just...
Man.
And these voices, everybody fucking brings it.
The thing is,
what's funny is you recognize virtually every one of the Dirty Dozen people, you will not recognize a single member of the Gorgonites.
Yeah, they do a really good
job. All of them are fucking, like, Langella is fucking, like, he does not sound like Frank Langella in that role. He is fucking Archer.
He is pouring a hot cup of Langella with his voice. Like, it comes out like Colombian roast Frank Langella.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
And then, of course, everybody else, it's just like, you would never fucking guess. But that's how much craft Dante put into this. Dante put a lot into this fucking movie. As much as Small Soldiers might seem like a small 1998 release, he poured his heart and soul in this. This was one of those scrappy little films that did not do huge business, but a lot of us film nerds just fell in love with.
Yeah.
And it's been one of my deep fried favorites for a long time. I've always really enjoyed it. And so the first time it was mentioned to do this, I was like, well, of course we're going to do Small Soldiers.
Yeah.
And then just... the guy wouldn't stop talking about it.
You know, you've put it in my head now, Predator or Dirty Dozen is such a great Sophie's Choice.
It is.
In that, I would watch either of those movies before I would watch Sophie's Choice. So
right.
that's how I work a Sophie's Choice. And I'm also thinking about Arnold Schwarzenegger. He'd be like, you Gorgonite scum, where are you hiding? Come out. Like, that's a different movie.
Well, that's the other thing. Interestingly, he would have loved it because what is coming out of Chip Hazard's mouth, but every cliched famous catchphrase in a war movie ever. Like, he's been programmed with all of them.
No poor sap ever won a war by dying for his country.
Yeah, well, they do the
Patton moment.
But they also, have I love the smell of polystyrene in the morning. You know.
Oh my god, though. Oh my god.
Now I know. Now you're wondering. You're hearing all these lines. You're like, fuck. I kind of want to. But no. The thing is, here's what I love about this. All of these guys are doing their thing, but they really feel like the characters. Like, you don't, like, if that were Arnold doing that, that's all you would hear, and you'd be giggling at the fact that that's clearly Arnold saying all these lines. And instead, you know, Chip Hazard is Chip Hazard. He is not Tommy Lee Jones. He is a psychopathic little army bot. Mm-hmm. Whose only concern is what he was programmed with, which was destroy the Gorgonite scum.
Yeah,
like, he has got to cleanse the earth of Gorgonite scum. And by God, there is a whole fucking enclave of Gorgonite scum, and they are with fucking Gorgonite scum sympathizers, and they got to be eradicated.
Yeah, I'm also. Like Jesse Ventura saying stuff like, bunch of flat-fronted Ken dolls. This shit'll make you a goddamn sexual tyrannosaur. Like, this changing the line entirely.
You know, okay, so, you know, this movie is very self-explanatory. There's not really a need to fully go through the plot of this.
The toys get into the hands of a boy named Alan Abernathy, whose dad runs a sort of, like, throwback retro toy store. He doesn't like a lot of war stuff, but he's trying to make money for his dad. So Dick Miller, the truck driver for the big toy for Globotech,
genuflect when you say that name, motherfucker. That is
Globotech. No, I'm just kidding.
Dick Miller.
There's a great scene where the kid's trying to get him to basically front him a set of these toys, and he says to him, come on, you're saying in all the years you've driven a truck, nothing's ever fallen off the back? And
Dick Miller, I don't like your tone.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's too loud.
It's too
loud. Oh, it's so good.
It's such a great moment. It's like, because you know that Dick Miller's the guy that, like, of course stuff falls off a truck. You just don't say it loud.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'll lose the paperwork. This stuff fell off. You know, it's a huge company. They'll be like, oh, shit, something got screwed up. We'll send out a couple more boxes from the warehouse.
Now, it's important to note this was the first shipment. So he has, like, the first shipment of them. And immediately the Commando Elite come to life and start going after the Gorgonites. The Gorgonites are hiding. Blah, 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 blah. The one thing we haven't mentioned yet that is crucial is the fact that this is the last filmic performance from the great Phil Hartman. Phil Hartman is so incredible in this movie. Like,
doing what he did so well in this era, which is playing the obnoxious neighbor.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the obnoxious best friend. He was always that, you know, thorn in your side, and he's so good here. There's actually a number of Saturday Night Live alums in this. Sherry O'Terry has an uncredited performance in this.
Yep.
Of course, McKean was a longtime member of the cast. As you know,
I feel like people forget that. Like, people always associate him with just the Christopher Guest movies, but he was an SNL alum as well.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, it's this cast, everybody is fucking pulling their weight, and everybody's doing great. Kevin Dunn, of course, who
plays this exact same role in all of the Transformers movies now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what he does. He plays the lovable, dopey father. He specifically plays
the dad to a kid that gets a hold of something that puts them in the middle of a supernatural war.
That is also true.
That is basically like I think he slightly traded up from this kid to Shia LaBeouf. It's not a huge trade up, but it is a marked trade up, you know, from the kid who was a bit player in the highly successful Harriet the Spy. I'm sorry, that's still just that really sat with you.
I saw this movie,
by the way. I saw Small Soldiers in the theater. I was 14. Yeah. You want to feel like Old Man Cargill for a second?
Old Man Brian, that Old Man Brian.
So you were like 28, I think. I don't know the math exactly.
Oh, no. I was 23 when this movie came out.
I'm fucking with you. I know you weren't 28. I remember seeing this.
I was 56.
I remember seeing this in theaters and then thinking immediately to myself, like, I can't wait to fucking buy all of the Commando Elites and all the Gorgonites. And watching it as a 34-year-old man, I thought to myself, man, I really wish I had a whole set of Commando Elites and Gorgonites. Because it turns out when you're a geek, time is cyclical. It's a flat circle. And now I'm buying toys again because that's, and they're not even, I can't even lie and say they're for my kids. I'm buying toys for myself, and I'm going to get my hands on, I definitely remember all of the marketing around this movie. And it's so funny because the movie itself is about a toy company getting in trouble for trying to push the next big thing. And then the toys they made from this movie were pushed as the next big thing. I found that kind of deliciously ironic.
Yeah, I mean, even that this kid you keep kicking in the nuts, Gregory Smith. Can we talk about Gregory Smith for a minute?
This is not the first time you've accused me on the air of kicking a child in the nuts.
Well, yeah, but this Harriet the Spy thing, you know, he had a rough go of it after this. He did. Yeah. He's acted and he's still acting, but
he's on a very successful Canadian drama, by the way. The Rookie Force or something. But it's gone on for like season after season after.
Okay, first of all, it was called Rookie Blue and it starred Missy Peregrine and it was on EBC. It was a co-production. I got to a lot of friends with Rob Hunter about that fucking show. Sorry. I digress. I apologize. I just have a lot of feelings about Rookie Blue. Okay? Back to the regular scheduled program.
Don't worry about Alan Abernathy.
But he is in Hobo with a Shotgun.
He is in Hobo with it. So clearly Canadian, because if you want Canadian, Jason Eisner is pretty much as Canadian as filmmakers
Jason
get.
Eisner is as Canadian as they fucking get. And then he's also in some remarkably terrible, terrible stuff. He was in The Patriot. I'll give him that. He did do The Patriot. But there was, I'm trying to remember which terrible...
Oh, you mean Revolutionary Soldiers?
Revolutionary Soldiers.
This is not the conduct of a gentleman.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Yes, yeah, no, it's, oh, right. I forgot he was also in, because he had that moment, he went from The Patriot to American Outlaws. And then... The Seeker, The Dark is Rising.
Oh, boy. Everything else is just a better movie.
So Small Soldiers is kind of like a career highlight.
Yeah.
But, you know, when your career highlight is several scenes where you make out with Kristen Dunst.
Yeah, that's
Kristen Dunst.
By the way. Can we talk about her character shorthand in this movie?
Okay, see, this is where we need to get into some of the... I love Small Soldiers.
Oh, I do too.
Small Soldiers has a few problems.
I think the biggest problem is the character shorthand. This is literally a conversation in this movie to tell you everything you need to know about how the characters are developed in the script. Kristen Dunst says, what's your favorite band? No, she says, do you like Led Zeppelin? And he says, yeah. She says, they're my favorite band. His immediate next line, you know, you're not like other girls.
Yeah, you know, you're not like other girls, Kirsten Dunst. You're beautiful. You listen to Led Zeppelin. You're in touch with your inner child, and you're kind of a cool person. You're essentially Cargill's wife. yeah, as it turns out, there are girls like you, and being cool is not something restricted to boys, asshole.
Yeah, not only that, but, like, the idea that liking Led Zeppelin makes you not like other girls. Like, could you pick a more, like, Led Zeppelin is not some band no one's ever heard of. They're one of the biggest bands of all time.
Yeah, as much as I do love this movie, Kirsten Dunst's character is treated very problematically because she is very much a perfect example of the prize for the boy. You know, she is less of a character and more of a prize to be won through his own bravery. And what's weird about it, the thing that doesn't need to be here that is inexplicably here, is she has a boyfriend.
Yeah.
And the boyfriend does everything this other neighbor kid does. He's just less successful at it because he doesn't have plot armor.
Exactly. Like, he doesn't have plot armor.
He doesn't
plus 50 plot armor.
He doesn't have plot armor. So, like, he gets mowed down very quickly by these things.
By the way, I'm sorry. I'm just going to go back to this for a second. The idea that he could look at her and say, you like Led Zeppelin, you're not like other girls. When he has got posters for REO Speed Dealer and Honky on his fucking wall... What? Why would you at all be impressed that she likes Led Zeppelin? You are so full of shit.
Yeah. No, he really is. Like, that is the really problematic part of this movie is how they work her inclusion into this film is that she's pretty much the damsel. Now, in the third act, they actually do something really cool, and she's saving his bacon left and right. And yeah. I think that's awesome.
Yes.
And I think, like, especially for 1998, without making a big deal out of it, without making a meal out of it, she's just a little badass, and these two clearly belong together. But she's got this weird stuff like, I just want you to know I only date older boys. And it's like, why? There's nothing else in your character that would indicate that this is, like, I don't, like, why is this a thing? You know, so much of her is just so weirdly handled to make her inaccessible so that when he acts like the hero, he gets the girl. And I just, it's a problem that I've that has existed in filmmaking for quite some time. It is one of those things that's baked into the DNA of our culture that has driven, you know, the view of women as second-class citizens, as objects. And I hate that for a portion of this movie, she's objectified and then treated as somehow weird and different because, oh, hey, she likes cool music. And yeah. Also collects, she still collects Gwendy dolls. I think that's an interesting touch. You know, the thing that, you know, they're both in touch with toys. They're both in touch with their,
okay,
as the name of the store is, their inner child.
But there is a line when the Commando elites animate the Gwendy dolls, which, by the way, great use of the Bride of Frankenstein music cue as they're putting pieces of the chip into the Gwendy dolls and the bringing moment, them to life.
Also the moment where this movie goes off the fucking rails, where it's like, oh yeah, you know, it kind of made sense with these microprocessors we put into these animated toys, like where their articulation is, no one fucking knows, and why something that advanced only costs $80, who the fuck knows, but they're only $80.
Well, it was 1998, so $80 was like $2,000, I'm pretty sure.
No.
I think that's how inflation works. Cargill, I'm pretty sure that's how inflation
$80
works.
$80 is what a Sony CD game cost in 1998. Like, that is...
Sega CD. Sony PlayStation.
That is correct. Sega CD. Like, that's what some video games cost in 1998, was $79.99.
Can we talk about how awful a game system the Sega CD was? It was basically just a Sega game that was going to pause every 3 minutes to watch a cinematic that was really poorly shot. And then it was back to the game. And it was like, really? That's what I'm paying for? Is these shitty little interstitial, like...
Well, first of all, when that first came out, when that happened, that was fucking awesome. It was like, holy shit, like, there's real video.
Am
here.
I playing a game or watching a movie? I don't
it's
even
both.
Know.
It's both. It's both. No. But that said, there's a reason why there's a great meme online of Sega CD games, because Sega CD games were famously shit. There was only one Sega CD game that was ever awesome, and that's Echo the fucking Dolphin. And
that should tell you everything you need to know about Sega CD. That's the one good game.
The one great game on Sega. I know there's going to be some nerds who are going to push up their guns and go, actually, there were several good games on Sega CD.
Save your well actuallys. Fuck you. No. That's
Echo
Sega
the
CD.
Dolphin.
Fuck Sega CD.
And I think the Echo the Dolphin sequel,
1998, Brian sitting over here playing his Nintendo 64 and having a great time. Go fuck yourself, Sega CD.
Yeah, well, yeah. So, but yeah, so, but $80. So, all of that makes sense. But then when we get to the Gwendy dolls, it doesn't make any fucking sense why shocking them with electricity and plugging them into a plasma generator would somehow turn these pieces of plastic into highly articulated AI devices like them.
Also, are we going to talk about why they turned all the Gwendy dolls into G.I. Jane? They shaved all of their heads for some reason, I guess, to make them more
creepy.
Creepy. Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's pure horror. It is pure fucking horror at this point.
Oh, yes.
When they take her down and they're like, let's see if her head comes off. Now we get to play with you. And I'm like, is this Trilogy of Terror? Did I suddenly switch channels and I'm watching Trilogy of Terror?
Kind of.
What the fuck is happening? But she also says in that scene when she's smashing them up, I always hated these things. Then why did you collect? I'm so confused by that line. Like
as a character, she's really all over the
your
map.
Your mom made you collect Gwendy? I don't fucking under... What? What is happening right now?
Yeah, no, she loved her. In fact, we see her placing a Gwendy doll up on the shelf at one point in her room. It's
I need
not like
someone to investigate this girl, to watch her, to spy on her. I wonder if there is a spy from this era that we maybe could hire, maybe like a kid spy, so it's not weird. So a kid who's a spy to spy on the... Oh, maybe Harriet. Harriet the spy's available. She's a big hit, apparently.
I feel like looking at this neighborhood that Shia LaBeouf is on house arrest in the next house and is just eyeing this underage, 16-year-old at the time, Kirsten Dunst.
I hate to break it to you, Cargill. You might just be talking about your current neighborhood. It's entirely possible that Shia LaBeouf is on house arrest or right next door. So good luck sleeping tonight.
I do not live in a rich neighborhood. Fuck you.
Neither is he at the moment.
Well, all right. Well.
I mean, meth costs a lot of money, dude. I don't think he's living in a
rich neighborhood. Oh, no. As far as I know, it's not meth. It's entirely alcohol.
I'm sorry. Enough alcohol to make Shia LaBeouf Shia LaBeouf. It costs a lot of money.
Are we really, the two of us, going to bag at anybody for a little drinking?
No, I was bagging on him for meth, but you said that wasn't right. So fair enough. I'm sorry to disparage the good name of Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf.
Mr. LaBeouf.
Everything else is just LaBeouf.
You're not LaBeouf.
Where's LaBeouf? Anyways.
Well, sorry, I had to get a little Rooster Cogburn in there for a second. Like I just had to go back to 2010 and open that box.
Yeah.
You are not LaBeouf.
The fact that they can reanimate these like Gwendy dolls by, oh, he says, because one of them dies, Nick Nitro dies in a garbage disposal, speaking of horror, and they use the chip in his head. They're like, bring me the head of Nick Nitro, which, by the way, is my favorite Sam Peckinpah movie. Bring me the head of Nick Nitro. They take the chip out of his brain and somehow split that one chip into like 20 separate chips to put in these Gwendy dolls that then attack people in the creepiest ways imaginable.
Yes. And then the movie just gets bonkers, and that's where it's a
then
lot
it
fun.
Gets bonkers.
Like then that's from this moment on, it's all these fucking little angry dolls sieging a house, and it's gremlins.
And
that's when it's full on gremlins.
To the point that there's a Gorgonite called Insaniac that acts exactly like one of the gremlins. It's just like the whole time, and I'm like, yeah, that was one of the gremlins. Like, you might as well have Major Stripe Hazard, like the evilest of the
Major
gremlins.
Dick Swallow.
Major. wait, what? What's happening? That's a different movie that I am not opposed to seeing. I did appreciate this. The Commandos, the Gwendy dolls, they speak almost exclusively in puns. It is just Pun City USA throughout this whole movie.
They're having a blast with it. Like but also this is that time in movie history where we've entered this very strange moment where Hollywood has realized, oh, hey, if you throw a couple of pop culture references into the kids' stuff, it's like the old Warner Brothers tunes back in the day, and adults can laugh along with the kids. They're just laughing at different jokes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a All Quiet on the Western Front yard.
Yeah.
That's clever. I'll have your dog tags for this, he says to a dog that's chasing him. It's a hot pursuit when they're chasing with the flamethrower. The weirdest one, though, and I have got some...
And when you mean weird,
I mean Joe Dante's got some explaining to do. Is when Kirsten Dunst is smacking the Gwendy dolls with a baton, and they're like, she's got a baton. It's a baton death march.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's a bold move for a kid's movie to reference, oh, I don't know, the slaughter of POWs by the Japanese army during World War II?
It's a little weird.
What?
This movie's batshit. I mean, this is what I love about this movie.
That is so inside baseball. It's inside the insides of baseball.
Yeah.
It's what the rubber bands are made of. It's fucking crazy. Also, bomb them back to preschool is something one of the commando elites says, and I'm not sure what that means. I don't think I want to know what that means, but yeah, so you're right. The whole end of this movie becomes a siege where they've built vehicles out of stuff in the garage that are apparently modeled after the vehicles from the Road Warrior, which is kind of badass because it's like suddenly toys are driving the fucking wasteland mobiles, and I'm all for that. They're shooting like corn cob holders and flaming tennis balls.
And they've got a machine gun made out of a nail gun.
Oh, man. That's actually pretty terrifying. I'm not going to lie.
No, there's some stuff in there that's like legitimately fucked up. And it's like, oh, shit just got real. These toys have upped their game. And it gets a little crazy. And that's the weird. And the weird thing about this movie is its tone is because it always stays a family adventure film and feels like it's headed towards horror, but it never gets there. It never captures the true tone of Gremlins, which is why this one is not a classic the way that Gremlins is. Gremlins is a movie that just fucking hits the gas and goes for it. And this is a movie that's like, let's make that, but let's pull back. And it's like, well, the hitting the gas is what made that movie work.
Yeah.
Now, this film is still great in its own right. And it's still a lot of fun.
But I mean, they weaponize everything in that garage. I just imagine like, Jason Voorhees shows up to kill some people and he goes in there and he's like, what?
Where is
nothing in here for me to use. What the fuck? Also, there is a shit ton of licensed music in this, including Led Zeppelin, who tends to be like real sticklers for their music ever getting used in movies. So I think that's specifically why they make a reference to Led Zeppelin. But it, the way they work it into the dialogue is still weird. But I mean, we've got that. This was the movie that introduced 14-year-old Brian to Edwin Starr in the song War. Which is
good God, y'all. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Say it again.
Ripping off Gremlin. Say it again. Yeah, that's what War is good for. And then, like, yeah, there's all kinds of, like, licensed pop music in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And it's used, it's all used very well, but it's just, it's surprising how much of it there is. And I do like the siege at the end. I think it gives Phil Hartman a couple great chances to shine. I love it when he comes out with the white flag and he's like, I'm here to negotiate the surrender of the Gorgonzolas. And they've established that he's like a technophile. So like the toys keep stealing all of. There's also a moment where all of the Commando elites burn to death in a fiery crash, except for Chip Hazard, who floats down the river like Michael Myers in Halloween 4, going into Halloween 5.
And has the burn on the face.
Yes, like he's a goddamn T-100. And then where does he wash up? Toyland. And
by
guess
the way,
what?
Yeah,
they're delivering all of the Commando elites.
No, they're picking up and recalling
all
the
Commando
elites.
Because by this point, Alan has called the company and told them what's going on, and they are like trying to cover their ass. There's also a great scene at the end where Dennis Leary shows up after all of the destruction.
With a check machine.
With a machine that issues checks, and they joke. And it's a rule of threes, they do it three times, is I'm really upset and you can't possibly buy me off. Ching. Oh, yes, you can. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, there couldn't possibly be enough money you couldn't possibly have enough money to buy us. Oh, you do.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. And they do it three exact times. It's very much a rule of threes situation. But yeah, no, it's so much fucking fun. It's got an incredible cast. There's so much to be nostalgic about because the movie itself is about sort of it's what Joe Dante does best, I feel, which is to make something perverse that is really like sweet at its core. Like Gremlins is really just like the perversion of like a boy's first pet. This is a movie about the perversion and subversion of like the idea of getting the toy you always wanted. Like it really is just Dante being like, oh, what do you love? I'm going to make a dark version of it just to fuck with you. And he does that very well. And I think he does that well in this movie. And I want to say this was actually a hit, and I'm trying to remember if he got another, like, widely released, like, big movie like this after...
After this didn't he do the Looney Tunes movie after this?
Oh, you're right, Back in Action was after 2001, which, by the way, I'm going to say it, maybe you don't agree, I would say Take a Drink, because I actually really like Looney Tunes Back in Action. I think...
I'm going to say Take a Sip,
because
I'm not certain how that movie holds up, and I have not watched it since it came out. I was not a huge fan when it came out, but I'm willing to give that one a shot again.
Well,
I would like to also point out this is essential because we've completely slept on this one. The writers of this, of course, it was written by Gavin Scott and Adam Rifkin. Who did number of things over the years. Adam Rifkin right now is directing documentaries and doing very cool stuff. They worked on a number of stuff over the years. Someone who's come up in the past and legends, Ted Elliott and Terry Rossio, who of course, you know, so many, you know, the Shreks and the Pirates of the Caribbeans and, you know, are just some of the classic writers, you know, of your favorite films over the last 20 years, that are huge. A movie that, by the way, here's Take a Drink, a movie they did that I think we're going to do at some point, Treasure Planet.
Okay.
There's a very good chance we will, hit up, but yeah, these guys have been around and done tons of stuff. And so, I mean, this is why this movie is so tightly constructed and why so much of it works is you've got, you know, four different great brains that went into this script, at least being directed by Joe Dante, somebody who started his career as a nerd. In fact, we must mention, you know, Joe Dante, for those of you that don't know, started as one of the Corman hangers-ons. He came out and would like carry cable and do whatever he could for Corman.
And he ended up being the guy that cut all of Corman's trailers.
He became the guy who cut all of Corman's trailers, and Corman loved him. And several of the other guys that came with him, because they were all these guys that had grown up on Corman's movies and looked up to him. And it was the first time that Corman was like, holy shit, there's a generation of young guys that want to, that grew up on my shit and want to come and make this shit.
Yeah.
Like, cause he was just like checking out movies to make money. It's like, wait, these guys not only love it, they love it. And now they're coming in. And so Joe Dante then made, you know, a movie that's not so great, you know, with Hollywood Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it's called. Yeah, yeah. And but then would go on to work with Corman on Piranha.
Piranha.
So there is our tie-in to Summer of 78. So he went from 78, it's Piranha, and in Summer of 98, it's Small Soldiers.
True story. And by the way, if we were talking about how we were a little bummed that we cut October a little short, Adam Rifkin, one of the writers on Small Soldiers, yes, wrote and directed a movie called The Last Movie Star, starring
Burt Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds. So there you have it. Everything kind of connects back. Also, we didn't even mention who did the fucking score for this movie.
We did not.
Because it's kind of nuts that it's Jerry Goldsmith. Jerry Goldsmith did the fucking score for this movie. And in the scene where they're riffing on Patton, got to use his own Patton score in that scene.
Yes.
That's what's nuts about that. Oh my gosh. This is one of my like childhood favorites. I loved this movie so much. I watched it again and again and again and again. I'm so glad we got to cover it on this episode. And thank you to Levi out there who just bombarded us like flaming tennis balls into a suburban house. Just kept sieging Junk Food Cinema's Twitter account saying you must cover this movie, you must cover this movie.
Did he tweet at you every day? Because he linked me at certain times.
He tweeted at Junk Food Cinema, at Junk Food Cinema. I feel like I need to keep telling you this, Cargo, because I don't know that you know we have a Twitter account. At Junk Food Cinema.
No. I know we have a Twitter account. I have no access to said Twitter account, so I can never tweet as said Twitter account. But I don't see what's tweeted at Junk
Food
Cinema.
Every day for a solid month, he did this, and it was so impressive. And we wanted to cover this movie anyway for so long. I was like, we have to do this.
We had to, and so Levi, this one was for you. I hope it was everything you dreamed of. If it's not, go fuck yourself. Can we talk about the Burger King commercials?
This is going to bring us to the junk food pairing, which this week is going to be a rodeo burger.
A rodeo burger.
Which was, Burger King introduced this. It was a cheeseburger that had onion rings and barbecue sauce. I think you could still fucking get it at Burger. I haven't been to Burger King in ages, but I'm pretty sure you can still get a rodeo burger.
I mean, guys, there's nothing wrong with Burger King.
Thank you.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with Burger King. We just live in Texas and have Whataburger. And once you have Whataburger,
game over, man.
Game over, man. Game over.
But, okay, so I want to
That's who's missing from this movie.
Bill Paxton.
Where the fuck was Bill Paxton?
Just one of the guys in the neighborhood like, fucking game over, man. Toys coming alive, taking lives. They're fucking firing tennis balls into the house.
No, that's what, he had to be one of the soldiers.
And oh, yeah.
He had to be the soldier that lost his legs and be like, game over, man. Game over.
Is this just going to be another Gorgonaut hunt?
See, now you want to see that too.
I do.
It's gonna
see
be
that.
Another Gorgonite hunt.
It's so Sarge. So true. You know that archer you had was female. Don't matter when it's Gorgonite. Listen. The point is, Burger King jumped on the Small Soldiers bandwagon hard
before it was declared PG-13.
Yeah, and yes, and they got very upset about that, but they stuck with it, and they made several commercials, actually. And I remembered the one from childhood that was like, you know, we have toys in the kids' meals. Like, it's like they're sieging Burger King, and they're like watching all the kids play with the toys, whatever.
But that's not the weird
one.
That's
not the Rodeo Burger Small Soldiers commercial.
Oh, boy.
Now, this is a military courtroom scene, so essentially what they're doing is recreating A Few Good Men.
Because you know what? When you're pitching a burger to kids,
yeah,
an Aaron Sorkin written rated R movie about the assault of a soldier.
Oh, I'm surprised that Archer and Chip Hazard didn't do a walk and talk in this commercial. But so it's Chip Hazard on the stand and a military lawyer saying, you left the base without authorization to get a rodeo burger.
Did you order the rodeo burger?
Darn right I did. It was flame broiled and delicious.
And then they cut back and Chip Hazard's being led away by military police. It's like, so that rodeo burger's pretty good. You can't handle the rodeo burger. What are we even fucking doing here?
I just feel like, who ordered the Mountain Dew at Who ordered the Mountain? Did you order the Code Red? Did you order the Code Red?
See, that at least makes sense to me. It's awful, but it makes sense to me. And
yeah.
So now I'm thinking, like, was it just like Jay Moore back at Heartland Play Systems? Like, you know what I'm thinking for this fast food commercial for Chip Hazard? And then they just went with whatever the first idea was.
You know what
was.
The kids love? Tom Cruise.
They love a few good men.
If only Tom Cruise were in a military movie
that
wasn't about flying planes, but instead was about a courtroom drama.
You know how people say, like, it goes together like peanut butter and jelly, like chocolate and peanut butter, or Jack Nicholson and rodeo burgers? Like, wait, what? Like, I mean, like, I've seen him lately. I mean, that kind of...
At least they didn't go, like, with Wolf. Like, I mean, this was the 90s. Like, if you're going to reference inappropriate movies for kids, like, let's just go balls deep with it.
Or he takes all three of the Witches of Eastwick for a nice dinner out to Burger King and then turns into a giant French fry or some shit. Who knows? A lot of things could have happened, but that's why the Rodeo Burger, which is a weird creation in and of itself, housed within a weirder marketing campaign for this weird movie that we love, is absolutely the junk food pairing this week.
Yeah, I don't think I could come up with something better than a rodeo burger.
That commercial, like, look it up on YouTube. It is so fucking weird.
It's
like,
bonkers.
Somebody, I just, like, somewhere there is an ad agency where a Don Draper type is like, here's what we're going to do. We're gonna tap into what it is that everyone fears and everyone loves at the same time. The legal system.
It's Jack Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson.
I'm not wrong. That's pretty on message for Jack Nicholson.
This is true. Guys, thank you so much for joining us for this episode, this not so small episode about small soldiers. If you want to hear more of our episodes, you can go to our back catalog on iTunes as well as Blog Talk Radio. You can also find us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema. Like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And if you really like the show.
I mean, really like the show.
If you like the show as much as we're assuming Jack Nicholson loves the rodeo burger, you can go to patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. For as little as a dollar an episode, you get access to bonus content that nobody gets to hear, and that helps support the show. And guys, we really do appreciate you doing that. Cargill, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Massawyrm, MassawyrM.
Awesome. You can find me on Twitter at Bryguy Salisbury, and again, at Junk Food Cinema. But I'm going to wrap this show up by reminding you that Junk Food Cinema, everything else is just a podcast.